Okay, we're starting here three lines from the bottom of Tzadi Ted Amud Bet. Gemara says, Amar Chizkia, my dichtev, what is meant by the pasuk that's found in Iyov? Over here, it's Iyov's friend Elihu speaking to him about the greatness of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, how HaKadosh Baruch Hu takes care of those that are good, and then he punishes those even that are good when they do something wrong, trying to put them onto the right path. And if they don't listen, and they don't go onto the right path, then they will be punished. And over here it says, "Vafes itcha mi pitzar, rachav lo mutzak tachteha, nachat shulchancha malei dashen." So it says that God has led you out, or the really word hasata means to convince you, to lead you, quote unquote, astray. So here he's led you out of a place where it is constricted, where it is limited, mi pitzar, rachav lo mutzak tachteha, to a place that's broad and wide open, that has no narrowness at its bottom, and he has brought you to a place of a table full of malei dashen, full of fats and full of good foods. God's ways are very different than man's ways. When it comes to human beings, when a person is mesit, he convinces someone to do something, he leads them astray. He does it from life to death. The pasuk of Ki Yisitcha is used in the Torah to describe someone leading another person to worship Avodah Zarah. So it's a negative formulation. Yisitcha or hasata is to lead one astray, but astray in the meaning, the negative connotation. Another, Hashem tries to move a person in the other direction. When he leads them, quote unquote, astray, he's trying to push them away from bad into the good. Shnemar, because it says here, Vafi Yisitcha mipitzar. He took you out of that narrow area, mi gehinom shepiha tzar, from gehinom, whose mouth or opening is narrow, she'ashana tzavur bitocha. The reason that it's narrow opening is so that the smoke doesn't escape from the heat and the boiling of gehinom, and it's trapped inside. B'shema tomar k'shem shepiha tzar, kach kula tzara. You would think, just like the opening is narrow, so too the whole thing is narrow. Tamalomar. So then we bring the pasuk from Yishayahu. The truth is that the sukkim there in Yishayahu were speaking about Melech Ashur and about what's going to happen to him, even though now he's ascendant and things are going well for him now, but that's not going to remain that way forever. As it says in the sukkim a little before that in pasuk Lamed Aleph, Ki mikol Hashem yechat Ashur v'shevet yakeh. Assyria will become devastated by the voice of Hashem, by the presence of Hashem. And then the psukim continue, and then in Lamed Gimel it says, Ki aruch me'etmol tafteh. Hashem has already prepared from yesterday the tafteh, which is used, the terminology that's used in Tanakh many times, to mean a huge fire, or to be a synonym for gehinom. Gam hi lamelech huchan. It's also prepared to receive the king. Hemik hirchiv. It is deepened and it is widened. Midurata esh ve'etzim harbe. It's inferno full of wood and fire. Nishmat Hashem kenachal gafrit bo'araba. And the breath of Hashem is like a flowing stream of sulfur burning within it. That's the pasuk that they're quoting from Yeshayahu. They're quoting that part that says, Hemik v'hirchiv. Shemar tomar lo melech lo huchana. So maybe you will say it's not prepared for the melech. Rashi over here says the melech is a reference to the Talmidei Chachamim, who are also known as Milachim. And then it'll connect back to the previous Gemara that speaks about someone who was a Talmud Chacham and gave up learning or went away from their Torah. You would think maybe their Torah protects them on the day when they go to Gehinom. And the answer is no, it's even prepared for the king. On the other hand, you could read it in the Pashtuta Pasuk, which is it's prepared for the king of Ashur, who the king of Ashur you think might escape from this punishment. Because in the end, Hashem will catch up with the Melech Ashur, and he will punish him over here. Or the Karen Arah explains that the Melech here is just a kinui for someone who's enjoyed the benefits and the pleasures of Olam Hazeh. You will think that that person who's ascendant in Olam Hazeh won't be impacted the Olam Haba. So Talmud Lomar, that's what it says in the pasuk that we read before, Gam hi lamelech huchan. It is prepared even for the king. Shema tomar ein ba'itzim, you would think there's no wood there. Tamalomar midurata ish ve'itzim harbe. It's inferno burns with fire and wood. Shema tomar zehu schara. You would think that the reward for those that are righteous is to avoid this terrible punishment, but nothing more than that. Talmud Lomar, that's what the end of the Pasuk in Iyob says, that not only does Hashem save the one who is righteous from the narrow constricts and confines of Gehinnom, but he also gives him a Nachat Shulchan Kam Alei Dashen, that he prepares for you, sits down a table full of all the goodies and the fats of the land. So not only will you not be punished, but you will also be a beneficiary of all that that is good. Chal Yom HaKippurim Liot B'Shabbat. So the Mishnah describes that there were these individuals who used to eat the Korban when Yom HaKippurim fell for Shabbat, and therefore they couldn't eat the Korban being cooked because it was leading straight into Shabbat, and so they'd have to eat the Korban raw. And it says that those individuals, the Bavliim, used to eat it, Ochlimoto Shuchai. They would eat it raw, Mipnei Shadatan Yafeh, because they're able to eat that. They don't have any problem with that. Amar Rabba Barachan, Amar Rabbi Yochanan, no Bavliim heim, Alexandriim heim. They're not really Babylonians. They're really people from Alexandria, Alexandria of Mitzrayim. That's a very, very large Jewish community. And the truth is, it was a very wealthy Jewish community. So it's a little surprising that this was the type of behavior that they displayed. But nevertheless, these are people from Alexandria that ate that way. So why do they call them Bavliim? And mitoch shusonim et Bavliim, korim otam Hashem Bavliim. But since they hate the Babylonians, they nicknamed the Alexandrian Babylonians. So Rashi says over here, mitoch shusonim chachmei Eretz Yisrael et Bavliim. Those chachamim, the Talmidei Chachamim in Eretz Yisrael, dislike the Bavliim because of the fact that this is a ravenous type of behavior. It is gluttonous in its behavior. And therefore, they don't like them. And just like they don't like the Bavliim who act in that way, they call the Alexandrium of Mitzrayim in that manner. The Baalei HaTosafot, on the other hand, say that the dislike of those in Eretz Yisrael for the people in Bavel is Shelo Alu B'mei Ezra, that when there was a time to make Aliyah, they stayed back in the good land of Bavel, and they didn't make Aliyah to Eretz Yisrael. And therefore, the Chachamim and the people of Eretz Yisrael had disdain for those in Bavel, and therefore they nicknamed the Alexandrium in that manner. Now Tosafot says, what was the big deal? Why are we so negative on them if in the end they're doing what we needed, which is to eat the Korban and not have it become notar? So Tosafot says, Lefish shehir gilu atzmam, kmo kein ochlam chayim, af kol hashanim, demechsei kerabanan tunuta. That they ate like this all the time. They didn't just eat it in these occasions when it was necessary. They did this all the time, and it makes them look like they were gluttonous, that they were just ravenous and couldn't wait for a minute, and they would just stuff the stuff down their throat without cooking it and without waiting for it to cook. So that's why they were negative on it. Tanya Nami Ochi, we have another brayta that supports this contention. Rabbi Yossi Omer, lo Bavliim heim, Alexandriim heim. They're not Babylonians, but rather from Alexandria the Mitzrayim. Dokshu sonim et Bavliim, but because they dislike or had disdain for the Babylonians, korim otam Hashem Bavliim, they call them in that same manner. There's a similar Mishnah in the Gemara in Yoma, which has to do with the sending out of a Seir Mishtaleach and people pushing the person to get it out quickly and pulling the hairs of the animal. And over there they use a similar expression where they call them Bavliim, even though they're not Bavliim, but rather Alexandriim, a similar genre. So Amalo Rabbi Yehuda, Tanuach Datcha, Sheinachta Dati. So Rabbi Yehuda says to Rabbi Yossi, you should be at ease because you put me at ease, because Rabbi Yehuda's family, as Rashi notes, was from Bavel, and therefore he felt uneasy about the fact that they were degrading, or they were saying negative things about the Babylonians. In the end, it turns out it really wasn't the Babylonians that were doing it. It was really Alexandrium. But nevertheless, there's still a negative connotation to this because they were calling the Alexandrium Babylonians because they had something negative to say of Babylonians. But nevertheless, Rabbi Yehuda felt better about it, that it wasn't actually the Babylonians who were doing it. And therefore, he says to Rabbi Yossi, thank you for putting me at ease. All right. Sider et alechem b'Shabbat v'dbazichim achar Shabbat. He put the lechem apanim on Shabbat, but the bazichim were put on after Shabbat. V'yiktirat bazichim b'Shabbat, pasul. And then he puts on the bazichim, he's makriv them on the mizbeach on the following Shabbat. Then they are pasul because the bazichim weren't on the shulchan for the requisite amount of time. The lechem and the bazichim need to be on from Shabbat to Shabbat. Here the lechem was fine on the Shabbat, but the bazichim got on too late. But you can't do anything now because if you're not makriv the bazichim, then the lechem is going to go pasul mipnei lina because it's on for the 7 days of the requisite amount of time that it needs to be on the shulchan, which is really 8 days. Ein chayvin alem mishum pigol notar vitameh. They're not subject to any one of these items. Pigol, because we know the guards to pigol, that has to be karev matirav, that the matirim have to end up in the mizbeach as if it was done properly. Over here, the matir for the lechem apanim is the bazichim. they don't end up on the Mizbeach in a proper manner, if they don't end up in a proper manner, you can't generate pigul, because there's another failing here. It's not just pigul, that's the problem. If you have a machshev pigul, it's not going to impact. Notar, you can't have that which is left over, because you need heter la'achila. For something to be notar, it first has to be mutar, to be eaten, and then afterwards it becomes notar when it passes some expiry date, but here it never became mutar la'achila. Bitamei, someone who has tumata guf, and eats it bitumata guf, they're not going to be subject to karet, because eating it bitumata guf is only a problem when it's good for tohorim, then when someone tamei eats it, then it's problematic. Again, here, it's not good for tohorim. So there is a failure in the lechem of panim to the point where none of these normal items were going to apply to it because of the fact that it never got off the ground. I mean, there was never any time period where it was kasher le'achila. Sider et lechem v'et bazichim b'shabbat. So he did everything on time. Bigdir et bazichim l'achar shabbat. But then he put the bazichim on, let's say, achar shabbat, the makar, the next day, meaning on Sunday, he puts the bazichim on the mizbeach. Psula, again, there's a failure here, because the bazichim didn't sit the requisite amount of time on the shulchan, which is for the 8-day period. He took the bazichim off a day later, and he left the lechem there, but the bazichim do nothing to be matir. And then again, you have no solution to the problem here, because if you put on new bazichim, they need to wait for 2 weeks. They're never going to cross over that period of time. They need to wait there until the following Shabbat. But the lechem that's on there is already going to go to Lina once it passes the next Shabbat. So there's no rectification. Once again, pigul, notar, and tamei are not relevant over here because there was never a matir that was matir lechem upanim be'achila. There's a failure inherently in the korban that makes it that none of these are going to apply, as we explained in the previous case. Sider et lechem et bazichim la'achar Shabbat. Here, both of them were put on improperly on Sunday. Bigdir et bazichim b'Shabbat, and then he does zahakdarat bazichim on the following Shabbat. Psula. Once again, it fails because you didn't have it on there for the requisite amount of time that it needs to be there. Ketzad yaseh. So then, here there is a rectification. Here there's a way to deal with it. This is something that we saw earlier. Yenichenu l'Shabbat haba. Just leave it on, let it roll to the next Shabbat. Shafilu hi ala shulchan yamim rabim, ein bekach klum. Even if it's on the shulchan for many days, it's not problematic. Now, it's not exactly like it sounds. From the Pashtut, the Mishnah, it sounds like as long as it's on the shulchan, it can just keep staying there forever and ever. That's not true. What it means is that it has to have an 8-day period that passes while the lechem apanim is on the shulchan. And that 8-day period has to include from the Shabbat that it was put on to the Shabbat that it's taken off. Over here, you have a deficit because it was put on Sunday. So that week, or when you get to the next Shabbat, there was no trigger for it to become lina. The trigger of the next Shabbat is actually when it should have gone on. So then it's as if it was put on the next Shabbat, and then the following Shabbat, which is 13 days later, that Shabbat will be when it is subject to lina, and then it would be kasher if it's taken off on that Shabbat. So that's what the Rashi says over here, that ve'yamot shvu'ayim al shulchan, it'll stay 2 weeks on the shulchan, tekeven delo nizdar b'shabbat, since it wasn't placed on Shabbat, ein shulchan mekadesho. The shulchan is not mekadesh it ad the Shabbat haba. Therefore, there's no lina. And the fact that there is no lina here is not because as long as you're on the shulchan, you're safe. No, it's the fact that it never became kadosh, so then it's not subject to lina. Following Shabbat, when it does become kadosh, then a week later on the Shabbat, the second Shabbat, it will become pasul b'lina, and you can't just keep leaving it there. Here, when you put it on Sunday, it didn't work. The kedusha didn't work. And that's why you can leave it for those 6 days on the shulchan without any problem of lina. It's not hotam. We have a mishnah over there in Yoma. Amar lehem ha-mimuneh, tzu uru'u im higia zman shchita. Why don't you go and check if the zman shchita has come about? Im higia, if it has come, uru'e omer, the scout, the one who's in the lookout, says, barkai, light has broken, or the light of the morning has broken. So here they're looking for the beginning of the morning. It's not really so clear as to when this is. Rashi says of here, hi'ira yom, which is the light of the day, which would be somewhere akin to alota shachar. the other hand, Rashi and Yoma seems to indicate that it is Netzach Chama. It's actually sunrise. But the truth is that it probably is something in between the Alot HaShachar and sunrise, because we know that they started before the sun rose. We also know that they didn't start as far back as Alot HaShachar. It's probably some period or interim period between Alot HaShachar and the sunrise. Matatya ben Shmuel Omer Heir Pnei Kol Mizrach Ad Shebechevron. He says that when they responded, "Is it light?" and they would say Barkai, then they would ask him, "Heir Pnei Kol Mizrach Ad Shebechevron." Did it light all the way until Chevron? And then Hu Omer Hein. And then the scout or the lookout would say, "Yes, it has." V'ha'al lama hu tzruchu l'kach? Why did they need to do this? Shepam achat alam or halivana. At one time they had a problem where the moon had risen. I don't think it really means risen, but it means that the light of the moon was so great. V'jimu shehira mizrach. And they thought it was already the point of hira mizrach. That's why it already shows you or indicates to you that it's not sunrise, because that distinction would have been pretty clear of sunrise versus the moonlight. But moonlight can be pretty bright at certain points in the month, especially as you move towards the middle of the month. And so they thought that there was sufficient light that it was actually here at Mizrach. So then, in order to prevent that problem from happening in the future, they wanted to get a certain depth of light, saying, how light is it? Is it so light that you can actually see the light towards Hebron? Now, the mention of Hebron is not because of anything particular about the light reaching Hebron, but rather to be me'orer z'chut avot, as Rashi says on Yom HaKippurim, when they want to bring up z'chut avot, they began the day with saying, has the light reached until Hebron? Hebron meaning z'chut avot. The question wasn't really about the light to Hebron. The question is, what's the extent of the light that has extended on the horizon now? Because that way they could differentiate between light from the moon, which would be much smaller amount across the horizon and not as expansive, versus the sun rising, when you get a much broader spread of the light. So that was the nature of the question, according to Matatya ben Shmuel. Matatya ben Shmuel, as the Baal Yad Tosafot point out, and Rashi mentioned something similar, is Metim Shoy Muneh Al Kach. He was appointed for this purpose. That was his job. And that's how he knew that this was the case, is because he's mentioned in the Gemara Shmukalim as the Muneh Al Paisot. He was the person in charge of the lotteries in the Mikdash, the lotteries which were the beginning of the Avoda in the Mikdash, to choose which Kohen is going to do what item. So he was the one asking the question to the lookout, to the scout who was looking for the light. He was the one posing the question. And he says when they posed the question, not only did they pose the question of here Pnei Kol Mizrach, but then they asked a secondary question was, Ad Shebechevron. Is it reached all the way to Hebron? And the reason is explained here by the Mishnah, because of the problem that one time they got confused by the light of the moon. Then they thought it was here at Mizrach. Shachatu et tamid. They shechted the tamid based on that. Then they ended up having to put it in the Beit HaSrifah, burn it, because it was pasul. They shechted the tamid too early, and so therefore it had to be taken out to be burnt. This is the continuation of that Mishnah Yoma, is that once things began to go and roll in the Mikdash, they used to take the Kohen Gadol down to the mikveh. He has to go to the mikveh 5 times on Yom HaKippurim, including the first time when he enters into the Mikdash. Zeaklal haya b'mikdash. This is a principle in the Mikdash. Kol ha-meisich et raglav. Anyone who defecates to'un tvila requires going to the mikveh. Kol ha-matil mayim. Anyone who urinates to'un kiddush yadayim raglayim requires the washing of his hands and his feet. Question of whether this is simply nikiyut, which is just a matter of being sure that the person is clean and that's why they have to do tefillah, or that's why they have to wash their hands. Or is this an issue of tahara, that this is considered to be something that is mitameh in some senses, and therefore you need tahara in order to enter in the Mikdash? Truth is, if you're outside the Mikdash, then for sure you have to go to tefillah anyway, because you're not allowed to enter into the Mikdash and do avoda without tefillah anyway. So either the question or the nature of this is to do with someone who's coming in not to do avoda. Do they need tefillah or netilat yadayim? Or it's about someone who's already working in the Mikdash and they have to go relieve themselves. And we know from the Mishnayot that there was an underground tunnel where they had a place to relieve themselves, the Kohanim, and therefore they could be in the Azara working, then descend there to relieve themselves and then come back up into the Azara. Maybe this is the question as to what do they have to do in order to re-enter the Azara. So So the question of whether it's someone coming from the outside or someone internal, as well as to whether this is just nikiyut, or is this actually tahara of some sort. It is true every day, but the description that's given in the Mishnayot and Yoma is about the day of Yom Kippur itself. Tanei Avod Rabbi Avin, lo zu bilvad, not only is this true, ela afilu olatov shenimlika, if you have an olatov that had malika done to it, balayla, that was done at night, umincha shenikmitza balayla, or mincha that had a kometz taken off of it at night, they'd say the beit ha-sreifa, they would be taken out to the beit ha-sreifa. The Mishnah that we brought from Yoma and the parallel Mishnah in Tamid was a situation in which they shechted at the wrong time. They did shkitat beima. And that fails because there's a requirement that it be done during the day, which is beyom zivachem, on the day that you bring your zevach. I mean, there's a requirement of yom with regards to the zevach. But the havamino might be that that's not true when it comes to a mincha or a lotov, because they are not considered to be a zevach. A zevach is specifically associated with a behema. It's not associated with a mincha or an anof. So the Braita comes to teach you, but that isn't the case because we have Bayom Tzavoto, which is the pasuk that's found by the beginning of the Miluim, that Bayom Tzavoto tells you that all obodah has to be done during the day, and that's irrespective of whether it's a zevach or not. So that's what the Braita is coming to teach you. Now he asks, Avuah the Rabbi Avin is a Braita. They ask about the Braita. Bishlama olatov mishum delo efshar ladura. I understand by olatov why it's a failure. You did it at the wrong time. There's no putting the head back on the bird once you've done the malika. So it's done. What's done is done and you can't rectify it. Ela mincha efshar demehader kometz leduchtei. For a mincha, just take the kometz and put it back into the mincha. You took off a kometz, just replace it in the mincha. And now you're back to ground zero. You start it over again. Why not? And you can then take it off during the day. You can rectify it. It's a reversible situation. He brought the question. He brought the braita and the question. And then he explained it. That klisharet are successful at creating tusha even at the wrong time. So over here, when you take the komets off the mincha, you have to place it into a klisharet. Placing it to the Kli Sharet is Mikadesh the Kometz. Once the Kometz is Kadosh, you can't then put it back into the Mincha to start over again, because it already has Kedushat HaGuf as a Kometz. It's an irreversible situation now. Even though the truth is that he did it at a time where it shouldn't have worked. It's at the off time, meaning that it's at night that he did it. The Kli Sharet should not be successful being Mikadesh at night. This teaches you that even at the wrong time, the Kli Sharet is successful at creating Kedushat. We're going to have an interim question, but you can see where this is leading to. We just said in the Mishnah, if you put it on the wrong time on the Shulchan, then just leave it there for another week. But if you think that Kli Sharet are able to be Mekadesh Lo Bizmanam, why isn't the Shulchan Mekadesh the Lechem that you put on at the wrong time? Yes, it doesn't work because you put it on the right time. It works because you put it on the wrong time. The Kli Sharet is successful. That will be the eventual question. This is where it's leading to. But in the interim, we have a question. Meitevei, Kol HaKarev Bayom, Kadosh Bayom. Anything that is brought during the day can only become Kadosh during the day. Balayla, things that are brought at night, Kadosh Balayla. Then their Kiddush happens at night. So Rashi says, Bayom are normal korbanot, normal things, are processes that are done in the Mikdash. You only Mikadesh them during the day because that's the time period where they need to be brought. What can be brought at night? Rashi claims over here, Minchat Nisachim. The Menachot and the Nisachim, which are associated with the Korban, they can be brought even at night. So those are things that, if they're brought at night, are Mikudash at night as well. Tosfot over here brings the other option, which is Miyesh Mefarshim HaTavat HaNeirot, the fixing of the candles, or the lighting of the candles of the menorah, which is an avodah that can be done at night. Although he says he's not sure that the word Karev, which is the opening line here, should match with HaTavat HaNeirot. It's not something that you make Karev al Gabi Mizbeach. Ben Bayom uben Balayla, something that can be brought both during the day and at night. Kadosh, ben bayom, ben balayla. Can attain kedusha both during the day and the night. Kol hakarei bayom, kadosh bayom. Bayom in, balayla lo. The diak we're making out of this is, yes, anything that is brought during the day becomes sanctified during the day. But that implies it would not become sanctified at night. So that's a question on Avuah Rabbi Avin's explanation of the brayta that he brought. He says the reason that you can't replace the kometz back in the Kli Sharet that it started with the Mincha, is because it went into a nuclear sharet. The nuclear sharet was mekadeshet, even though it was the wrong time. The wrong time there was night. They did it at night. So why should it work? You have here an explicit braita that tells you, you do it at night, you can't be mekadeshet. So my answer is, ena kadosh li karev, ava kadosh li pasel. It's not sufficiently kadosh to allow it to be put on the mizbeach. I mean, that's not a successful kedusha to the point where now you can put it on the mizbeach, but it's successful enough that it ruins it and you can't put it back. So it's an irreversible kedusha, but not a kedusha of a sufficient form that allows you to put on the mizbeach. So you're right, when you take it off at night and put it into the kli sharet, yes, you cannot then say, oh, I was successful placing it into a kli sharet, I can put it on the mizbeach. Because then you mekadesh it, it was nighttime, and nighttime doesn't allow for that kedusha. But it doesn't mean that there's no kedusha here. It means that there's a certain level of kedusha was attained in the kli sharet shelo bizmano at night, enough to make it that it's pasul, and you can't now replace it and put it back into the original mincha. Sufficiently kadosh, so now it's going to get ruined, that when the morning comes, it's going to be pasul belina. And since it's going to be pasul belina, you can never get it on the mizbeach, because the morning will make it lina before you ever have the opportunity to be daytime, when you could have put it on the mizbeach. And that brings us to our question that we noted before, motiv Rabbi Zeira, our Mishnah. Sider et alechem v'et abazichim achar Shabbat. He puts them on the Shulchan after Shabbat on a Sunday. V'iktir et abazichim b'Shabbat psula. V'izmaktir et abazichim on the following Shabbat psula. Teitzad ya'aseh. What does he do? Yenichena l'Shabbat haba. You leave it on for an additional Shabbat, another week. Sh'afilu hi'al ha'Shulchan yamim rabim ein b'kachum. Even though it sits on the Shulchan for many days, there's no problem. If you tell me that the kli sharet are successful, alright, it's not successful making them kadosh enough to blow on the mizbeach, but it is successful making them kadosh enough that they're going to be pasul, then why don't you say the same thing over here by the Shulchan? The Shulchan is a kli sharet. You put it on its wrong time. It should be successful enough to make it kadosh. That when the time period elapses, that is the 8 days that it needs to be on the Shulchan, that automatically should then expire at that point in time, and you shouldn't be able to leave it on for an additional week on the Shulchan. Amarava, mandaka motiv, shaparka motiv. First of all, the one who's asking a question is asking a good question. The question being asked from our Mishnah is a really good question. But on the other hand, avuad Rabbi Avin, nami matnita kamar. Rabbi Avin was not just making up a din. He was in response to a braita. Avu Bar Avin, when he brought the braita down, he was bringing a braita that had a problem in it, and he needed to solve the problem. It wasn't some independent statement where he said, Kli Sharet Shelo Bizmanam is Mekadesh. He didn't make that as an independent statement. He made that in the context of a braita that needed explanation. That means that what he's pointing out is, we have a problem here. We have a statement in a Mishnah, which is clearly correct. And we have a statement in a braita, which the explanation for is very necessary. And now I have a stira between the two of them. But you can't just say one's wrong. They're both right. So how do I reconcile between them? Kasavar, laila ain't mechusar zman. He believes that laila is not considered to be mechusar zman. Meaning that nighttime is already considered to be a period of time which is available and ready for that korban to be brought. There's a deficit because you need to bring it during the day, and there's no avod at night, but that doesn't mean that it's chaser in any way. If you're supposed to bring this item today, then when you bring it at the night before and you put in the kli sharet, you're not mechusar zman at that time. That's a time period where it is ra'oi to end up in a kli sharet. Right, you can't do avoda at that time. So there's a technical failure in that the avoda can't be done, but there's no failure in terms of the kli sharet because it is a time period which is available to you for the korban to be brought. The Gemara says, "Laila ain mechusar zman, hayamim mechusarim zman." On the other hand, days are mechusar zman. So, as opposed to the case by where we have the kmitza taken off the mincha at night, where that day would have been fine to do it, it's just you have a technical problem that there's no avodah at night. That night already is considered to be the day in which it's appropriate to bring this item. And therefore, when you put it into the kli sharet is mikadeshit in an irreversible manner. By the Shulchan, that's not the case. The Shulchan doesn't have a deficit of an overnight. It has a deficit of 7 days. You put it on Sunday instead of Shabbat, The deficit here now is an additional 7 days till you get to the following Shabbat. It's not a time that is ra'oi even to be nitkadesh there, because it's not just a technical failure, it's a failure in that it's not the time period in which this is available to become kadosh. It says, wait a minute, so, if that's the case, kimata lelya debeis shimshay, when the night of Friday night, meaning Erev Shabbat, comes along, the kadosh velifsol, it should become kadosh, and then become pasol. There are two ways to read this, depends on whether you use the emendation of Rashi, or whether you read Rashi as the way it is. If you read it the way that Rashi has it over here, the kadosh velifsol means on the first Friday night that you hit, it should become kadosh. On the second Friday night that you hit, it should become pasul. The reason being that you just told me Laila is not mechusar zman. So now, when is the time period where the lechem should be on the shulchan? Shabbat day itself. Normally, you put it on Shabbat day, and that's why it becomes kadosh on Shabbat day. The expiry for that would be the following Shabbat. And until you reach the following Shabbat, it hasn't had the requisite, we'll call it 7 day times, on the shulchan, and therefore when it reaches that period on Shabbat day, it's the time to take it off. And then you put the bazichim on the mizbeach, and then the lechem comes mutar ba'achila. Over here, the lechem is already on the shulchan. It's on there from the previous Sunday. You hit Friday night, you told me nighttime is not mechusar zman. That means that from that point on Friday night, the lechem already is now deemed to be sitting on the shulchan at its proper time. You told me a klisha raid is mikadesh something, when it's not mechusar zman. Laila is not mechusar zman. That means the shulchan is successful being mikadesh lechem that's supposed to go on that Shabbat, Friday night already. If it's mikadesh on Friday night, by the time you reach the next Friday night, it's already sat on the shulchan for the requisite number of days. That means by the morning on Shabbat, that following Shabbat, it's already lina, before you're going to be able to put the bezichim on, which are that following Shabbat. You can't put the bezichim on at night. You can only put them on Shabbat day. But by the time you reach Shabbat day, you've already had the point of lina. It's expired already. So that's why you have a problem. He says, it works nicely what you're saying. There's no mechusar zman. But then you have a problem with the shulchan, because the shulchan then should start working on Friday night. That's the way that Rashi reads in the Pashtut. There is an emendation that it would be, the Beis Shimshay would mean that the Friday night would be mekadeshit right away, that Shabbat, and then it would become pasul lina in the morning. Amar Rava, b'shekadam v'silei. It's not a problem that before Ben HaShmashot of that first Shabbat, he took it off the shulchan. He removed the lechem apanim. Lechem apanim were put on Sunday. He can leave them. Before Friday night, he takes them off. And then they replace them back on Shabbat morning. And then you've solved your problem. It's an inelegant solution to the problem, because it really does not seem to be what the Mishnah is saying. But Pashtuto, the Pashtuta Mishnah is that they just leave them there and they stay there. Here you're engaging in another activity, which is you're removing them and then placing them back on. What's the Kiddush? Now, of course, you put them on at the right time, the next Shabbat. I guess the Kiddush is that for those first 6-7 days that it sat on the Shulchan, that there's no problem with that. They wanted to leave them there so there would be Lechem Apanim Tamid ala Shulchan. But the truth is, they're not Kadosh, so it's not really what there is Lechem Apanim on the Shulchan. So that's one answer. Marzutra v'itei meravashi amara filutei mishloka adam misilek. It's even if he didn't jump the gun and take them off beforehand. Kevin disidro shaloka mitzvato. Since you set it up at the wrong time, nasek misha sidro akof. It's as if a monkey put it on, and the shulchan is not going to be mikadeshit. Aval komets kemitzvato chashiv alei the laila ina mechusar zman. Since laila is not mechusar zman, therefore, if you take off the komets and you do an action, that action has meaning. It's not like as if a monkey did the action. It's as if you did the action, and the action is a viable action. It's just at the wrong time. It's at night, during the day. But night is not a failure in the inherent korban. It's a failure in a technical sense that you need to do avoda during the day. For that reason, the komets is irreversible once you've taken it off. But here, where you put the lechem on the shulchan on Sunday, that's a meaningless act. Lechem on Sunday is the equivalent of lechem on Tuesday, Wednesday. It's meaningless all the time. There's no value in placing it on the shulchan on those days. And when you do put it on, it's no different than as if a monkey had put it on. There's no maiseh of mikadesh, because you're putting it on the shulchan. Ve'en shulchan mikadesho, elav afilu bizmano. And that means that the Shulchan, even when it hits the time period where it should be Mikadeshit, it doesn't automatically be Mikadeshit. The question is then what happens on the following Shabbat, when you hit the following Shabbat? So according to Rashi, it would seem, he says the Shulchan is unsuccessful in Mikadeshit, even Bizmano. From Rashi, it sounds like you'd have to remove it the following Shabbat and then replace it onto the Shulchan on that Shabbat. You won't have to do it before Friday night. You don't have to worry about that. As long as it sits on the Shulchan, it has no bearing, it has no meaning, because it was put on by a monkey. And there's no Maiseh HaMikadesh for the Lechem. You need a Maiseh HaMikadesh. That only happens when you place it on the Shulchan at the proper time with someone who's doing it who could be Mikadesh. So then the Kohen, he comes on Shabbat, pulls it off, puts it back on, and that'll start the process of Kedusha on the Shabbat after that Sunday. But if you just leave it there, it will always remain problematic, which is that it was never put on the Shulchan. You haven't solved the problem to me, no matter what happens over here, because the lechem that's on there is not lechem kadosh, and therefore it's not tamid. They might have left it on there so it has a semblance of being under the tamid, but in terms of if the lechem's not kadosh, then you don't have shulchan with lechem apanim on it. According to the Rambam, on the other hand, just leaving it on there, it's automatically mekadeshit on the following Shabbat, which is interesting, because where is the maiseh that's mekadesh? If you tell me it's as if a monkey put it on there, then why is it that when it gets to the following Shabbat, that action all of a sudden becomes an efficacious action to the point where, okay, now it's Mekadesh the Lechem. So it might have to do with Bizmano and Shalom Bizmano. In that when you do something at the proper time, and it is when it's supposed to happen, that can happen even without a Maiseh Mekadesh. When you hit Shabbat, which is the proper time during the day to place it on the Shulchan, that time the Shulchan of its own accord, it's able to be Mekadesh the Lechem. When you put it on it on the improper time, there you need a Maiseh HaMikadesh. If the Maiseh HaMikadesh is done in a period where it could become Kadosh, then it's meaningful. If it's done in a period of time when it can't become Kadosh, then it's meaningless. So by the Kometz, where it's done at night, it's not Mechusar Zman because it's considered to be that day, but it is Mechusar Avodah Bayom, there your action will be efficacious and ruin the Mincha. Here by the Shulchan, where it's done in a period which has no bearing whatsoever, it's Mechusar Zman de Gamre, then your action will have no bearing, but the Shulchan itself can be Mekadesh it once it hits the period when it's supposed to do it. That's the way you'd have to answer for the Rambam, who thinks that you don't even have to take it off. You can just keep leaving it on, and it's Mekadesh it by itself. The Baal Tosafot bring that the Mayim that was brought up for the Nisuch HaMayim, that they would fill it up on Friday night in order to bring it up to be used in the Nisuch HaMayim on Shabbat itself. That Nisuch HaMayim, they didn't do in a Kli Kodesh. They didn't do it in something that was a Kli Sharet. They did it in a Kli Chol, but they didn't want it to become Kadosh. If it became Kadosh, then it would be Pasul Belina in the morning. Tosafot says, what are you talking about? You just told me here, if it's Shelo Bizmano, you can't be Mekadesh. So there, the Nisuch HaMayim, or the drawing of the water, is Shelo Bizmano. It's being done on Friday afternoon, not on Friday night, when it's supposed to be done. So that's Mechusar Zman. Why should it be a problem with Kadosh? So he says that there's a difference. When do we say that your action is meaningless unless it's in the proper time when you put it into a Kli Sharet? That's when there's a requirement for Kehuna. That's when there's a requirement that all the trappings of what's normally done with the Kiddush of Kli Sharet are required. But the Nisuch HaMayim, you don't need a Kohen and his big day Kehuna to do it. Anybody can do the collection of the water, bringing the water up in order to be ready for the Nisuch HaMayim. Because of that, it's already considered to be the Kli Sharet would have been Mekadesh it. They don't need all the other trappings of Avodah and necessitate all those things that involve Kedusha. And that's why even if you did it outside of its Zman, it would be Mekadesh it to the point where there'd be a Solina. All right, next Mishnah. Shtei lechem nechalot ein pachot mishnayim velo yoter ashlosha. It's eaten no less than 2 days after it's baked and no more than 3 days after it's baked. Ketzad, what's the scenario? Nefot me'erev Yom Tov. The classic case is where they are baked on Erev Yom Tov. This follows the sheet of the Chachamim, that it's not docheh et Yom Tov. The baking of the Shtei Lechem is not docheh Yom Tov, and therefore it has to be done on Erev Yom Tov, because it doesn't have to be done bifnim, it doesn't need to be done in a Kli Sharet, and therefore it's not docheh Yom Tov, and you can do it beforehand. Nechalot b'Yom Tov l'shnayim. If you bake it on Erev Yom Tov, the Kohanim will eat the Shtei Lechem once the Kibsei Atzeret are brought on Yom Tov itself. That's 2 days. Baked on Erev Yom Tov, eaten on Yom Tov itself. Chal Yom Tov Yot Achara Shabbat. If Shavuot falls out after Shabbat on Sunday. So there you have a two-day Yom Tov. Nechalot l'shlosha. Then it'll be 3 days. Because baking of the Shei Lechem are not Tuchei Yom Tov, they're also not Tuchei Shabbat. It means you're going to bake them on Erev Shabbat. They're going to have Shabbat. And then they're going to be eating on Yom Tov. So there's a total of 3 days. Erev Shabbat, Shabbat, and Sunday, which is Yom Tov, before they eat the Shtei HaLechem. Lechem apanim nechal. Ein pachot mitisha. Velo yoter al achadasar. They can't be eaten no less than 9 days. And no more than 11 days. Keitzad, what's the scenario? Nefeh me'erev Shabbat. The normal scenario is where it's baked on Erev Shabbat. Again, it's not tochet Shabbat, the baking of the lechem apanim. It means that it's baked Erev Shabbat. Nechal is Shabbat, the tisha. You put it on that Shabbat after it's baked, but it's not eaten until the following Shabbat, which is 9 days later. So you have 9 days, including the day itself on which it's baked and the day itself which you eat it. That makes it 9 days. Chal Yom Tov Yot Erev Shabbat. If you have a scenario where Yom Tov is on Friday, Nechal Le'asara, then you have it after 10 days, because it's not Tochet Yom Tov, it's not Tochet Shabbat, it has to be baked on Thursday, and then it is eaten on the following Shabbat, which is 10 days later. Shnei Yomim Tovim Shel Rosh Hashanah. If the 2 days of Rosh Hashanah fall out on Thursday, Friday, then Nechal Le'achadasar, because then it's eaten 11 days later, because it's baked on Wednesday, because you can't bake it on Thursday and Friday, which are both Rosh Hashanah, can't bake it on Shabbat, and you have 11 days, including the day it's baked, and the day that it's eaten on the following Shabbat, those are 11 days later when it can be eaten, the Lechem HaPanim. Rashi asked a very simple question over here, which is, if Rosh Hashanah is Thursday, Friday, Shabbat is Yom HaKippurim. So how do you have it that it is eaten on that following Shabbat? The following Shabbat is Yom Kippur. You're not going to eat it on that Shabbat. So what the answer is, you're going to have to eat it on Motzei Shabbat. Motzei Shabbat, isn't that already 12 days? The answer is, in the Mikdash, the night follows the day. As opposed to what we have where the night precedes the day, in the Mikdash it's the other way around. Things that are eaten for Yom Valayla in the Mikdash are eaten on that day and the subsequent night in the Mikdash. So eating it on Motzei Shabbat in the Mikdash is the equivalent of eating it on Shabbat. And that's why it's only 11 days later and not classified as 12 days later. The Bali and Tosafot say we don't have to come to that answer of Rashi. In the time of the Mikdash, the reason they had 2 days of Rosh Hashanah is not like what we have today. Today we have 2 days of Rosh Hashanah, both because of the aspect of Sveika D'Yoma, which Rosh Hashanah, even the Mikdash, had an aspect of Sveika D'Yoma. That's because whenever the Edim came, depending when they came on that first day, you wouldn't know whether the first day was Yom Tov or the second day was Yom Tov. So what they did was, on the first day of what could be Rosh Hashanah, they kept it Yom Tov. Then, if Edim didn't come, then they would say, oh, that's not Yom Tov, the next day is Yom Tov. But if Edim come on that day, then that day is Rosh Hashanah, the next day is not Rosh Hashanah. Tosafot says, the only time this happened is after the Takana of Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai. Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai put in a Takana that if the Edim came after Mincha time, late in the day, on the first day, that they would keep the first day of Yom Tov and the second day of Yom Tov. The reason is that at some point you have to make a cutoff. At some point you have to decide, is today Rosh Hashanah or is today not Rosh Hashanah? If the Edim come too late in the afternoon, then the Levim have already finished up their shear for the Yom, the Korbanot of the day have been brought, everything's done, and now the Edim show up. You can't go back and reverse everything. You need a certain amount of time to finish up the Avodah and the Mikdash. So what they did was they cut it off at Min HaMincha Lamalo. At that point in time, if the Edim didn't come, by then, they kept that day as Rosh Hashanah, and then they made the next day Yom Tov. What Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai's takana was, that first of all, after that point in time, it's a cut off the Edim, and the next day is Rosh Hashanah, even if they come and testify that that day they saw the moon the night before, doesn't matter, the next day is Yom Tov. The second part of the takana is they kept the first day Kadosh. Truthfully, if it's not Rosh Hashanah, then it's a Yom Chol. By the time Mincha comes around, the Edim don't show up, then you can stop. You could just make it into Chol. The reason they didn't do that is because it would cause people to then treat the first day of Yom Tov or Rosh Hashanah always as a sketchy day. Because if they don't, last year, at Mincha time, they cut the whole day and it wasn't Yom Tov. So this year too, why should I keep it as Yom Tov? So to prevent that attitude from developing, he said that that first day remains Kadosh no matter what. So that's how the 2 days of Rosh Hashanah develop, which is even in the Mikdash, there could be 2 days of Rosh Hashanah because the Edim showed up very late in the day. So So technically, when they show up late in the day, Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai says you postpone it to the next day. Rosh Hashanah is really the next day, but you have to keep the first day as Yom Tov. So that's why you have 2 days of Yom Tov, even though in the Mikdash, at least, they should have had some information at some point in time as to whether the first or the second day was Yom Tov. There is a machloket about this, and here Tosafot clearly takes a side in that situation, which day is really Yom Tov. So Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai says the takana is that the Edim aren't good in terms of that day because they came too late in the day. The next day is Rosh Hashanah. When we say the next day is Rosh Hashanah, does that mean that the next day is Yom Tov because of that, and that's the takana? Or does that mean that the whole count of the Moedim now starts from the second day and not the first day? Which one do we keep as the real day for the count? Or in essence, when's Yom Kippur? Is Yom Kippur on Shabbat? Or is Yom Kippur on Sunday? Is it that the Yom Tov Rosh Hashanah really started Thursday or started Friday? Tosafot takes the position here that in that scenario, Friday becomes the real Rosh Hashanah. Well, Friday is the real Rosh Hashanah. That means that Yom Kippur is not until Sunday. So Rashi's question goes by the wayside then, because you have 2 days of Rosh Hashanah, Thursday, Friday, but Yom Kippur is not on Shabbat. Yom Kippur is on Sunday. So that's the answer to the question, where you have 11 days and you're going to eat it on that Shabbat. Is that Shabbat's going to be Erev Yom Kippur, not Yom Kippur itself? So that's how the Baya Tosafot solved the problem, although he leaves one question on it. Umiyu, Kasha, Hei Chayo Yom Kippurim Bechad B'Shabbat. How does Yom Kippur fall out on Sunday? They prevented Yom Kippur from falling out on Sunday or Friday because of the 2 days of Isur Malacha, where you can't do cooking and anything together. They prevented it. That's two of the reasons why we have Lo Adu Rosh. The reason that we don't have Rosh Hashanah fall out on Friday is so that Yom Kippur doesn't fall out on a Sunday. The reason that we don't have Rosh Hashanah fall out on a Wednesday is so Yom Kippur doesn't fall out on a Friday. So those are two of them. The last one, the reason that it doesn't fall out on a Sunday is because of Hoshana Rabbah. So that's a separate issue, that Hoshana Rabbah shouldn't fall out on Shabbat. But other than that, two of the three reasons why we move Rosh Hashanah around is to prevent it from falling on a Friday and a Sunday. Now he discusses that the Mishnayot in Arachin, where this Mishnah is a part of a list of Mishnayot that say not more than this and not less than this. So this Mishnah is there. Over there, it notes that in a normal year, you can't have more than 4 leap months or 8 leap months, meaning that there's a structure by which you can normally have in a year 6 30-day months and 6 29-day months. You can skew it in either direction, 4 to 8 or 8 to 4, in order to adjust. That's how we adjust the calendar. For instance, this year, we have what's called a Malay year, because this year, both Cheshvan and Kislev are 30 days. Those are the adjustable months in the calendar. This year we make them Malay. So this year happens to be the longest possible year that you can have in the Jewish calendar because it's a leap year. Plus we have both months, Cheshvan and Kislev, be 30-day months. This is the longest possible year that a Jewish lunar year can be because of that. So they have that adjustability in the calendar. That's how they avoided it falling out on Sunday and Friday. There's a view there, the Acherim, that it's Kisidram, and you can never deviate from the on-off, on-off, 30-29, 30-29. According to them, you can't adjust for the fact that Yom Kippur will fall out on a Sunday or a Friday. So only according to that opinion can it fall out on a Sunday. But we see in the Mishnayot in Arachin, it says there you can adjust the months. No less than 4, no more than 4. You can have no less than 4 29-day months or no less than 4 30-day months, meaning that you can switch back and forth. You have an adjustment in there. But anybody who has that adjustment is never going to have this situation. So Tosafot says it doesn't reconcile so well what I'm saying, because the author of the Mishnayot there clearly believes you can't adjust the months. And yet we're seeing here that Yom Kippur is going to fall out on a Sunday because Rosh Hashanah was Thursday, Friday. And I'm telling you it's going to fall out on a Sunday. That doesn't happen according to those Chachamim. So it's an interesting dilemma that he's in, although they're really in a bind. They didn't think Yom Kippur was going to fall out on a Sunday, because when they set up the calendar, they realized that they thought that Rosh Hashanah was going to be on Thursday. Just the Eidim didn't show up on the Thursday, and that caused the problem. So they set it up so that the Molad would fall out in a way that they could be seen on the Wednesday night, and that it would have been good for Thursday. Just the Eidim didn't show up. So even though maybe they had the adjustment mechanism, they adjusted it, but then it failed because the Eidim didn't show up on that Thursday. And then you don't have any more room to adjust between Rosh Hashanah and Yom Kippur. So maybe that's the possible answer to what the Balei Tosafot are saying. But nevertheless, he leaves that as a tzarachion on his solution to the problem. When it comes to lechem apanim and the shtei lechem, they're not doche Shabbat and they're not doche Yom Tov. In terms of being Eino Dochet HaShabbat, that's pretty straightforward. That's both the Lechem Apanim and the Shtei Lechem, because we already noted they don't have to be made Bifnim in a Kli Sharet. Because of that, they're not Dochet HaShabbat. Then you have to do it before Shabbat. Yom Tov is a little more sketchy. In terms of the Lechem Apanim, you can understand why they're not Dochet Yom Tov, because they're not a necessity for Yom Tov. So to say that they're going to be Ochel Nefesh, they're not Ochel Nefesh for Yom Tov. So why can it be Dochet? But when it comes to the Shtei Alechem, then why can't they be Dochet Yom Tov? Meaning that they're Ochel Nefesh to be eaten on that day. Why can't you bake the Shtei Alechem on Yom Tov itself? So that comes from a drasha with regards to Ochel Nefesh, which is Ach Asher Yachel Ochel Nefesh Hu Levado Yaseh Lechem. There's a drasha in the Gemara in Beitza and other places, Lachem Velo Legvoa. Means for you and not for Hekdesh, or not for Hashem. That the dispensation for Ochel Nefesh is only for your personal eating. It does not apply to things in the Mikdash. Lachem Velo Legvoa. According to what we're going to see here, there's an opinion that it is Dochet Yom Tov. He learns Lachem Velo Lenachri. You're allowed to do Ochel Nefesh for yourself, but not for a non-Jew. But then he makes it impossible that you can bake for Hekdesh on Yom Tov itself, and that's the dissenting opinion over here. Rabbi Shimon Gamliel Omer, Rabbi Shimon ben Askan, Dochet Yom Tov, Eino Dochet Yom Tzom. It's not Dochet Yom Kippur, it's not Dochet Shabbat, but it is Dochet Yom Tov because it's Ochel Nefesh. Now that's probably true by the Shtei Alechem, which are going to be eaten on that day. By the Lechem Apanim, it's unlikely, even according to Rabbi Shimon ben Askan, that it's Dochet Yom Tov, because Ochel Nefesh usually only applies to something that is eaten on the day itself. Here, when you're going to bake on Yom Tov, it's not going to be eaten until the following Shabbat. It's going to be eaten 8 days, 9 days, 10 days later. That's not something that's considered to be Ochel Nefesh, that's Dochet at Yom Tov. And therefore, the application of this is only really by the Shtei Alechem, not by the Lechem Apanim. Amar Avina, the Divi Omer, Nidarim and Nidavot, Ein Krevim B'Yom Tov. According to the one who says that, Nidarim and Nidavot are not brought in Yom Tov. This is a Machloket, as to whether Nidarim and Nidavot, voluntary offerings, are allowed to be brought on Yom Tov itself. Lo tema midoraita mitzda chazi rabbanu de gazer shelo yishaheh el midoraita nami lo chazu. That if you say that you can't bring the darim and the devot on Yom Tov, then don't say that the reason you can't bake the Shtei Alechem and Yom Tov here is because of some isur de rabbanan. Rather, it's an isur de oraita. The same reason you can't bring the darim and the devot on Yom Tov is because lachem velo legvoa would have the same application with regards to the Shtei Alechem. And for that reason, it's disqualified midoraita. It is a Torah problem to bake the Shtei Alechem on Yom Tov. The Shtei Alechem to Chovat Hayomu, say, because Shtei Alechem, which are Chovat Hayom, which is an obligation of the day, v'leka l'meima shem yishahet. And you're not going to have the reason for the institution of a gzerah. There is a machloket as to what the problem of bringing a neder nidava on Yom Tov is. Is there a problem bringing a neder and a on Yom Tov? Fundamentally, there's a problem? Or is it only a gzeira midrabanan? The gzeira midrabanan, as Rashi notes over here, is korbanot kol hashana sheino der minodev v'lo yakivim ad haregel. Person's going to go ahead and wait until the regel to bring all his nedarim and nedavot. Because he says, I have time, I'm going to be there on the regel anyway, I may as well bring them on the regel. So what he's going to end up doing is we mekavim melachto the Yom Tov. Nimsa mekaveinu mamtim melacha adamoi. He's waiting until that time on Yom Tov. Vod shemayavor bal tacher. And if he waits for the regel, he might violate bal tacher by waiting too long if he misses it on the regel. So we don't want people waiting around. So according to that day of nedarim nedavot ein krivim b'yom tov, if you believe it's a gzera derabanan over here by the Shtei Alechem, that's not relevant. The gzera derabanan is not relevant for the Shtei Alechem, because the Shtei Alechem are supposed to be brought on Yom Tov. That is their day. So there's no reason to say, oh, he's going to wait to do it then. What do you mean wait to do that? That's when they're supposed to be done. So even though there is lekel ameimer shem yishev, iktani enu doche, lo et Shabbat, lo et Yom Tov. And you see here that the Shtei Alechem are not doche Yom Tov and not doche Shabbat. You see that the problem is a fundamental problem, not a problem of shema yishev. That teaches you that don't think that the reason you don't bring the darim and the devot on Yom Tov is a gzeira derabanan. It's actually a fundamental problem. That fundamental problem is now indicated to us through the fact that you can't bring Shtei Alechem on Yom Tov. Why can't you bring Shtei Alechem on Yom Tov? That's the proper time. There's no reason for gzeira derabanan. Yet we still say you can't bring it. That's because of lachem velo ligvoa. That lachem lo gvoa is a fundamental problem on Yom Tov, and that will also affect Nidarim and Nidavot, which is lachem lo gvoa. Nidarim and Nidavot are things that are for gvoa, and therefore you're not allowed to bring them, you're not allowed to process them on Yom Tov itself, and that's the failure, that's the problem with Nidarim and Nidavot. It's a fundamental problem d'oraita, and not a problem midrabanan. Alright, with that we complete the perek hadranalach shtelachem. Now we move on to the next part. Amenachot v'nesachim shenitme'u ad shelo kidshu b'kli. If the mincha or the nesach becomes tamei before it was nitkadesh in a kli sharet, yesh lahem pidyon, then there is an ability to redeem the item. Mishe kidshu b'kli, once they already were mekadosh in the kli, ein lahem pidyon, they no longer have the ability to be redeemed. The kiddush hakli is what's called Mikadesh Gufo or Kedushat Aguf. There are two different levels of Kedusha. There's what's called Kedushat Tamim, which is monetary Kedusha, which is the value of the item is Nitkadesh. And then there's what's called Kedushat Aguf, which there's an inherent Kedusha in the item. So for an animal, as we're going to see, an animal itself, once you're Mikadesh it for a Korban, and it was Ra'ui to be a Korban, then that animal takes on inherent Kedusha. That inherent kedusha that makes it that you cannot redeem it anymore until or unless there's a mum. There's some sort of blemish in the animal that allows you to redeem it. But that's because there's inherent kedusha in the animal. When you are makdish, something for a mincha, whether it's that you set aside money for that purpose, or you actually were makdish, flour, oil for that purpose, they only take on what's called kedusha tamim. The reason likely is because they don't have anything inherently which is going to go on the Mizbeach that connects them to that level of Kedusha. A behema has a nefesh. It's a live item. Since it's alive, which is the dam, hu ha-nefesh yichaper, you're able to be mekadesh, the nefesh of the behema, Kedusha l'guf, from that moment. But for something that's inanimate, like flour, oil, and those types of items, when you mekadesh them, the natural Kedusha that's associated with them is just Kedusha tamim. You have to then do something to elevate them to Kedushat Aguf, and that means in the Mikdash, putting them into a Kli Sharet, which elevates them to Kedushat Aguf. So as opposed to a Behema, where you can be Matishit from the outset Kedushat Aguf, these items can be Nitzkadesh for Kedushat Tamim, but then they can only take on properties of Kedushat Aguf when they're placed into a Kli Sharet. And that's what it's saying over here, that Menacha and Nesek that became Tamei, if it's before they were entered into a Kli Sharet, you can redeem them, because they only have monetary value of Kedusha associated with them, so they can't be redeemed. You can exchange that value onto something else. On the other hand, once they've been placed into Kli Sharet, they've been elevated to Kedusha Taguf, and Kedusha Taguf, you don't have the ability to redeem. It's no longer a value issue, it's an inherent Kedusha. An inherent Kedusha cannot be removed. Balfot, Vayitzim, Valivona, birds, Itzim, wood, and Livona, and frankincense, Ukli Sharet, and a Kli Sharet itself, mishin nitme'u enem pidyon. Once they become tamei, they have no redemption. Shelo nemar pidyon, ela bebeima. Redemption is only allowed by beima. So here, by the ofot, the etzim and the bona, you don't have an interim stage. It says, by the mincha, you have a stage of kedushat damim, and then you have the necessity to put them in a Kli Sharet, which gives them kedushat aguf. By the oaf, they don't have any of that. The oath itself is going to be the item the dam is coming out of and is going to be put onto the mizbeach. So it attains kedushat aguf immediately. When you're makdishit, it is already kadosh via kedushat aguf. Same thing with the etzim and levona. They don't need to be placed into a kli sharet to attain their kedusha. Their kedusha is generated already at the point in time where the etzim and levona are nitkadesh. So then, since they're already kadosh, once they become tamei, they're stuck, because they don't have the ability to be redeemed, because a mum only helps with a behema, with an animal. A mum does not help with all these other items. They don't allow you to redeem it. So you have here two problems. One problem is, when does Kedushat Aguf kick in? Once Kedushat Aguf kicks in, there is no redemption. So for the mincha, and for the nesachim, that's once it hits the Kli Sharet, once it's placed into the Kli Sharet. For Behema, that's at the time that you're Makdishit, Bik Dushat Apet, that's the Kedushat Aguf. All these other items that we listed here also, when you're Makdish them, they attain Kedushat Aguf right away. Once you hit Kedushat Aguf, there's no redeeming it, with one exception. That's if a Behema gets a mum in it, that allows, there's a special dispensation to allow for redemption at that point in time. And it's only true with the Behema, the Garamum. Otherwise, you can't redeem it. So that means, once you hit Kedushat HaGuf, there's no ability to redeem. Amar Shmuel, Vafilu Ein Teorim Niftin. By the Mincha, when our Mishnah says that it's Tamei, therefore you can redeem it, it's Lav Dafka, it has to be Tamei. Even if it's not Tamei, you can redeem it, because it hasn't attained Kedushat HaGuf yet. So my time, huh? Why is that? Kama Delokadshe Bikli, Kedushat HaMim Ninu, Kedushat HaMim Niftin. So exactly what we explained, that as long as it hasn't reached the Kli Sharet yet, it is not Kedushat HaGuf. It doesn't have Kedushat HaGuf. It's just monetary value. Value can be transferred onto another item. Therefore, it can be redeemed. Va'nitma'utnan. Then what does the Mishnah say? They became Tamei. If that's the case, then it doesn't matter. Why does the Mishnah mention Tamei? Hu adin da'apagav delo nitmu. The truth is, even if it wasn't Tamei, you could redeem it. Va'ayde dekaybay mitna seifa. Since the latter part of the Mishnah says, say, Mishikidshu Bekli, Inlam Pidyon, once they become Kadosh Bekli, there is no redemption. Da filu nitme'u namilo. Even if they became Tameh, you can't redeem them. Once they attain Kedushat HaGuf, it's irrelevant whether they're Tahor or they're Tameh, you can't redeem them. So the Chiddush and the Seifa is, even if they become Tameh, after they have Kedushat HaGuf, you can't redeem them. Tana nami resha, shinitme'u achlo kidshu Bekli. So because of the Seifa, where it's a Chiddush to tell us that when they become Tamei, they cannot be redeemed, it mentioned in the Reisha also Nitme'u as a parallel structure. But the truth is, in the Reisha, even if it wasn't Tamei, you could redeem it. Pshita, what's the question? When they become Tamei, of course you can't redeem them. You're telling me the Chiddush is that when they become Tamei, you can't redeem them. Kedushat HaGuf, Ninu. Why would you have thought otherwise? They have Kedushat HaGuf, and we already know that. Once you have Kedushat HaGuf, you're done. You can't be redeemed anymore. So why is there any question here? Itzrich. No, I need it. Since a Baal Mum in the Torah is called Tamei, Tamei Nami Kabu Baal Mum Dami, we would think that a Tamei is the equivalent of a Baal Mum, meaning that the terms are synonymous. Tamei and Baal Mum can be used interchangeably. The Torah calls a Baal Mum Tamei. So you would think maybe the other way around is true as well. The Tamei is also called a Baal Mum. If it's a Baal Mum, then you can redeem it. So maybe Tuma would be a sufficient reason to allow you to be Kodeh, the Kedushat HaGuf. And we know, even by Behema, when you have Kedushat HaGuf, a Mum allows you to redeem it. So if I call Tuma the equivalent of a Mum, maybe that should allow me now to redeem it. So Hani Nami Lifrok. So these also should be able to be redeemed. Kamash Malan, the Lav Ki Hai Tamei, Kari Rachman of the Baal Mum. That not that type of Tamei, is what the Torah calls a Baal Mum. De Mikli Sharet, Lo Ashkechan De Mifrak. Because from a Kli Sharet, nothing can be redeemed. Because even by a Behema Balat Mum, meaning something went wrong with the Korban, after it entered into a Kli Sharet, we don't find any redemption over there. Kli Sharet is the final status. Once it hits the Kli Sharet, there's no redemption from it. Not by a Behema, not by anything else. Kli Sharet is something that's Mekadesh to the point, but there's no redemption from that point in time, even by a Behema. And it's only Behema in the status while it's still a Behema. If it gets a Mum in it, there's the ability to redeem it. Meaning that only a Baal Mum of a Behema is the type of Mum that allows you to be redeemed. So even though, yes, technically a Baal Mum is called a Tamei, and that means that maybe a Tamei should also be called a Baal Mum, nevertheless, the Torah prescribes that only by a Behema is Baal Mum significant or meaningful. And there you're allowed to do a redemption. But anything that's in a Kli Sharet, that can't be redeemed. There's no such dispensation. The Gemara asks, Baal Mum Eichi Yikre Tamei. Where is a Baal Mum ever called a Tamei? The Tanya, because they have a Braita, there are two psukim found in Parshat Bechukutai, and all the way at the end of Sefer Vayikra, where it says, Perech Chavzayim Pasukir Aleph, Im Kol Behema Tmeya, Asher Lo Yakribu Mimenu Korban LaShem. If you have a Behema Tmeya, that is not brought as a Korban LaShem, they meet at a Behema Lifnei HaKohen, then you place that Behema before the Kohen, Be'erich HaKohen Oto Ben Tov Vedra, Kerchacha HaKohen Keneyeh. Then you have the value, whatever that value is, then you redeem that value. So now we have one Pasuk that speaks about a Behema Tmeya. So now the Gemara says, "Bibali mumim shniftim akatub midaber." When it says it's something that cannot be brought as a korban, doesn't mean because it's tamei it can't be brought as a korban. It can't be brought as a korban because it's a baal mum. And the classic brayta form, it says, "Atomer bibali mumim shnifdu." How do you know it's talking about a baal mum that is being redeemed. How do you know? Maybe it's talking about a behemoth me'ah, a non-kosher animal. That's what a behemoth me'ah is. But it says that you wouldn't have thought because Shomer, when it says in the Sukkim there, in Pasuk of Zayin, so there's behemat me'ah is mentioned again in Pasuk Chav Zayin. Why do I need two psukim to tell me about a behemat me'ah, non-kosher animals? So hare behemat me'ah mura. That which is in Chav Zayin is speaking about a regular behemat me'ah, non-kosher animals that don't go on the mizbeah. If you are makdish them, then you're makdish them for their value, and then you redeem their value and you give that to the hekdesh. So then what is the behemat me'ah that we're speaking about earlier on in Pasuk Yud Aleph? Must be Hanamekayemi Ko Behemat Meya Bibali Mumim Shiniftu Akatu Midaber. That's being about a regular Behemat Tehora that could have ended up on the Mizbeach. It's not ending up on the Mizbeach because it has a mum in it. Yochol Yiftu Al Mumover. You would think, okay, any blemish allows you to redeem it. Tamalomar Shelo Yakrivu Mimenu Korban Hashem. It has to be something that is precluded from ending up as a Korban. Mishena Kreva Hashem Kolikar. It has to be something that can never end up on the Mizbeach. But it excludes this item, which is not going to be brought today, but it can be brought tomorrow, and therefore it's not sufficient to allow you to redeem it. So there we see there are two psukim. One pasuk that speaks about behemat me'ah, means literally behemat me'ah, non-kosher animal, that you're only makdish for its value. A behemat torah that got a mum in it, got a blemish in it, that behemah can't be redeemed, because it says being behemat me'ah. But me'ah, we don't need. We already had non-kosher animal. We must be talking about another type of disqualification. That is a behemah. So behemah that gets a mum in it, you're allowed to redeem it. But you see there that a baal mum is called me'ah. And therefore, we would have thought that baal mum and me'ah are synonymous. Mar in the end says, in Ochanami, they might be synonymous, but this dispensation is only given by a behemah. It's not given by kli sharet, and it's not given by any other item that is kadosh. Okay, we're going to stop here, 13 lines down on the top of Kuf Aleph, Amud Aleph.